My name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. There are times when I think that I have been born in the wrong decade. The man sitting here in this room with me, he and I share that from time to time. Because I tell you what, I feel that once we get into a position where Radio Memphis is really right, where it's supposed to be, and we move, in my office, I'm putting a goddamn bar in it.
Now you're talking. Madman style. Madman style.
Absolutely.
Those were the good old days where you could have a smoke.
Oh, yeah.
And a drink.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And you didn't have to be so
politically correct. Yes.
You bastard.
J.C. King joins us. He is the voice of the station, Radio Memphis. He's the voice you hear between tunes from time to time. The imaging pieces.
Man, you make me sound so official when I'm...
Well, you are. You've been doing... How long have you been imaging us now?
As I'm cracking a beer. I'm really a scumbag.
Dude, I've got... Thank you for the beer, by the way.
No problem.
Brought to you by Ananda? Is that what it is?
Ananda, and I have to say, right now, Wiseacre, you mother effers are getting my business because I am just loving this beer. Of course, I turn a lot of people off, but I'm also turning people on with it. So the IPA Ananda is... Yeah, it's our fuel for the show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for bringing it along.
No problem. And they didn't even pay for that fucking plug.
Well, you know, well, Wiseacre is a Memphis beer.
Absolutely.
Which and here of late, we've seen a kind of a neat little explosion of good craft beers that have cropped up around here.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they're not coming from your St. Louis and, you know, these other places that typically, you know, you wouldn't get it so fresh. And that's kind of like a plus, the fact everything's done right here in town.
Yes, St. Louis and Milwaukee, they make beer, you know.
Yeah, well, used to make beer. I don't know what the hell
they
make now.
Yeah, Budweiser turned to crap. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people would say, well, it's always been crap, but since they sold it to InBev in Belgium, and the Miller people sold off their shit to China.
Absolutely. Don't get much more American than that, boy.
Right on, man.
Yeah, whatever.
That's the way it goes. Now, JC and I have spent many an evening here on the back porch, or out on the back porch, rather. We're in the studio now, but we've sat out there waxing poetic, if you will, about the good old days of the business, even before you and I got into it.
Absolutely.
And I've talked about this on this podcast before, the romanticism behind radio.
Absolutely.
And that's what gets, that's what drives guys like us to get into this.
Well, you know, I liken it to what I was telling you about the other night. It's almost like any, you know, director that was making, you know, 8mm films as a kid and stuff like that, his own little stuff. And then once he made it into the business, now he's all jaded, you know, the smoke and mirrors are gone. You see how it's done and you still love it. But that little essence of magic, the mystique, is no longer there, and it kind of goes down with radio too, and you know it kind of sucks, but at the same time, it's in you. You know, it am you. What?
It am you. I like that. It am you.
What university is that?
It am
you.
It's somewhere in Italy.
All right,
it's right. The Italian American University. It am you.
Yeah, there you go.
the Fighting Wildcats.
Right next to
you.
What's the matter, you?
Yeah, what's the matter, you?
Good shit.
Yeah, because you know we've been working on other projects and stuff, and we talk about, you know, even like the really cool parts. And this has nothing really to do with radio, but the relationship that Johnny Carson had with Freddie DeCordova, and this is right up your alley.
It is, and as I usually tell you all the time, I don't know what other bastard my age would even know that reference, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah.
And we won't even get, oh yeah, I forgot, we can't talk about anything litigious, but if you heard any of the great stories, you know, the old Coke stories backstage
with
Cordova and the whole bit, yeah, and the ball busting that went on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wild stuff.
I remember seeing Freddie, that would show him every once in a while on TV. In that director's, you know, the canvas sling chair that it was sitting just, you know, stage right, you know, back where, you know, way right of where Ed was. Because Ed would often be on set, you know. But he's back there with that big, I remember that gigantic rocks glass he had. That thing must have weighed like 10 pounds. It was thick crystal glass, and that big ring he had on his finger.
Again, The good old days.
The dark glasses, you know.
The good old days when you can actually even come out on stage. If you were part of show business, all was forgiven.
Absolutely.
All was forgiven. You know, the old Jackie Gleason, you know, thing. You come out, you got a cigarette, and you get the, you know, or Frank.
Yeah.
The Rat Pack.
Well, it was Frank, for God's sake. Frank could walk in and do whatever he wanted to. And I think that could happen if he were still around.
You're probably right, actually, because right up to the end, he was still doing it his damn way and still pissing people off.
That's what you do.
That's exactly what you do.
You've learned this in this business, that if you don't piss somebody off, you're not doing your job.
Absolutely. Of course, it can go either way, but, you know.
Well, if you piss off too many people, then you become a liability.
Yeah, there's a big difference between being entertaining and just being a prick.
You know, so we know a lot of pricks in the entertainment business, and they seem to be making all the money.
Yeah,
they do seem that way. I don't know, I could be wrong in that, but
I think we're just bitter pricks.
We are bitter, which is why I built the station, because what else am I going to do, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly one of the things I was talking to you about, and we can share with the rest of the world is...
Please share away.
Because this is, and I guess this kind of falls right in line with the past couple of, subject matters from your previous podcast, but like, when you really think about it, what do you do when you spent your whole life in broadcasting? Your professional life,
right?
In broadcasting,
right?
It makes for a very funny sort of transitional period. If all you know is broadcasting, even from I started out in promotions, hitting the streets with flyers and T-shirts and spinning the wheel of douchebags for pizza and car lots and all that kind of bullshit, up until the point of actually arguing with other. On-air personalities. I love that term.
Yeah, on-air personalities.
On-air personalities. Yeah.
Air talent.
As opposed to the off-air personality. Bunch of fucking jerk-offs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, what do you do? I mean, you've spent all this time. You've learned the ropes. You've learned how to, duck, dodge, weave, everything from the sales douchebags to, the production, jerk-offs. Where do you take that skill set to? Where do you go?
There's nowhere else to go.
I mean, you can try to work it into other places, and I have. I've worked in offices. I've worked for the school system. I've worked for...
But that's only a sliver of the talents that you pick up in this business.
Oh, yes. This is definitely not even just to have the gift of gab, but to be able to function and have a career in it, if you can even call it a career, Jesus. But to have a career in it... It is an acquired skill. You do not go and pick this up from
the Columbia School of Broadcasting.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, hey, if they,
they taught some of this, but there's real world experience that can't be discounted.
That's pretty much all of this is, because there's no classroom that really prepares you. There's no classroom that's like, all right, pretty much what you were talking about, how the production jerk off shows up Friday night and they're like, okay, hey, I need you. They're not going to teach you that in Columbia School of Broadcasting. They're going to tell you, from this time you're going to do this. And no. It's not how it works, kids. Sorry to yank that fucking veil of security.
Right.
Down off of your head so that you can actually look at the Matrix. But it doesn't quite work that way. And sometimes, it just doesn't work work out for some people. And some people, man, they take to it like it is just, it's been them the whole time.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that feel like that. Like I've done this in a past life.
Okay.
Damn. I took to editing actual tape pretty well. Mm-hmm. It's a long process.
I can't say that that I'm glad that I... wasn't You're, there
cause. Yeah, well, I mean, it's, I don't know that I could do it now. It's been so long since I've ever touched it, but
the closest I came to that, and this will really give you an idea, is sitting in class and taking a fucking pen and rewinding my cassette tape, Raising Hell, Run DMC, because I played it until absolutely.
And it was the Bic medium points that worked out the best, because the cap had that little lip that went
that caught it perfectly.
Yeah,
perfectly. Yeah. You kids don't know what the hell we're talking about right now.
Oh, fuck them. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, they will. But so
where's that cassette?
That's the closest I've ever come to having to do any of that. But like we talked about the other night too, I mean, there's a generation right now that's so far removed from the cart system and that whole just mountain of bullshit, having to worry about having your carts ready and who was in before you and all this other kind of crap. And you came from the time of vinyl and records, you know, so there was that whole thing too. You know, you could time out records perfectly and, you know, knowing you had enough time to go take a dump and be able to make it back or take a leak or run outside for a smoke or whatever. So,
Well, smoking wasn't an issue. We smoked in the studio.
Look at me. Yeah,
exactly. We don't do it now because of the sensitive nature of the equipment. Right. But back then, that was all belt-driven crap.
Absolutely.
You know, there was no big deal.
Absolutely. You just pop it open, replace the belt, and you're good to go.
You're good to go.
Absolutely.
In fact, there was a drawer at KSYM at one of the the San Antonio Community College. It had a radio station.
San Antonio Community College.
Hell yeah, SAC. That's.
I forgot about that. That is so great.
Yeah, it was right across from the SALT Theater, San Antonio Little Theater, and they had a, you know, the standard fare college radio station, and it was 89.1, I think is what it was. And there was a drawer in the control room that had turntable belts in it.
Holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. I got the last set of turntables when I was actually DJing that I actually owned, they are belt-driven, and now when I talk to younger guys and it's all push button digital, look at me, I'm a DJ because I know how to press play, kind of shit. I sound like a bitter old man at this point,
but you're correct.
It's a trip, man, because it's just, it's so different, man. And I never thought I'd be the jerk off on the mic going, well, in my day, and now I'm doing it.
Well, see, like club DJs, they've got their playlist already done.
Absolutely.
You know, like Deadmau5, for example. I know he creates a lot of the stuff that he does, and I have a lot of respect for that.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's clubbing a show or DJing a show or, you know, at a club somewhere, he's really just hitting a playlist and then I guess maybe augmenting a little bit of what he does. I mean, I'm sure there's a talent to that.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to get those DJs.
Yeah, because I've actually seen, you know, the people that get on stage with the MPCs and that kind of stuff and actually construct a beat in front of a crowd. There's definitely a bit of a craft to that. You know, that came from a bunch of studio rats, you know, breaking out of the studio and showing you what they do. Kind of like how guys back in the day were like, a damn turntable isn't an instrument. You know, but then they learned how to play it and manipulate it, and you get the sounds, and you can do all that kind of stuff. And here's a bit of a story. I used to work for a hip hop radio station, and we hosted a. This is when I was still doing promotions.
Mm-hmm.
We hosted a old school Sunday night hip hop party every Sunday. It was one of the biggest, you know, sort of little gatherings that they would have in town back in the day, and my feelings were crushed because it was my job sometimes to go, and I don't know how I worked this out, but I did, I had to go to the airport and pick up whatever celebrity, you know, was supposed to be hosting the party for the weekend.
Right.
So whether it was, you know, whether it was Biz Markie or whether it was MC Light or any of these old hip hop artists, the first time I went to go pick up Biz Markie, which was a huge deal to me.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Because all these kids, they're like, oh, who the hell is this old dude? You know, whatever. And I'm like, this is who I give a shit about. I don't care about your jerk off at the time, you know, whatever punk ass kid was out. But I was like, this is like a real true artist right here. Even though he's a big joke, he is a masterful DJ. He got off the plane. He had two cases. That was it. And I was supposed to be loading him into the station vehicle. And I'm trying to be cool because I don't get starstruck. But like, you know, older dudes that I looked up to, they were always
your cases. You're talking about like road cases. Right?
Absolutely. But they weren't even like full size. You know, like I come from.
They had a handle on live, it. Like a
live instruments. So I'm used to lugging around PA systems and amps and crates and all this bullshit. He gets off the plane. He's got one carry-on bag, two cases. They're on rollers. He's like, I'm ready to go. And I'm like, well, where's the records? Like, where's the turntables? And he's like, it's right here. I got everything right here. Everything I need. He goes, I bring several records with me. They're in my bag of stuff that I might want to jump into. He goes, sure. But I got everything I need right now. He's like, I could do a party right here if I wanted to. And I was like, bullshit. That was one of the best livest shows, if I can use that term, that I've ever seen. And he rocked it all night. And if you turned your back and didn't look at him, you wouldn't know. But that was my first introduction to the technology of being able to DJ without actually DJing. if that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely.
And
so it, was he using like an MP3 or a computer or a CD or what?
Well, he had his laptop. I remember he was running a I think it was a MacBook, and he had you know, all of his MP3s and everything on there, and again I think he had a couple of CDs just to give him if he wanted to deviate from his set, you know, he would pop in
to read the room a little bit.
Yeah, especially because he's used to rocking, you know, an East Coast party, so if he was to come down south, he's got to have a couple of those, you know, things on his hip, so to speak, to be able to you know, whip him out and shoot at will. But
absolutely,
but that was the first time that I was like impressed but also crushed. Because one of my heroes, you know, when I was a little kid, that is now like one of the best DJs around, party DJs around. Shout out to you, Biz, because a lot of people don't know that about you. But it crushed me. I was like, wow, I thought you weren't a real DJ. And I still kind of feel this way, unless you can take a piece of vinyl.
Right.
You know, or some jerk-offs don't even like when you say piece of vinyl. If you take a fucking album or a record, whatever. And yeah. you can you know where to drop the needle on the groove, you know when the break is, you know how to use it, and like you just said, you read the room and you know how to work the crowd. And I was completely impressed. And all right, I'm done with my asshole story, but I just thought that was the first time that I was shown like
that was an eye opener for you.
You don't know everything, kid, and this fucking pioneer just showed you that right. you're actually an asshole. And I was like, I guess I am, because that was like my first introduction. And now you can't catch a fucking DJ with a piece of vinyl. You won't even catch him really with a with a CD now.
Right.
It's all, you know, preloaded MP3 shit, and they got the stuff now that cues everything for you, and you don't have to.
Or
they
got a 3 or 4 hour set already laid out in one file, and they just push the one button
and sit there and fist pump over the top of the fucking table,
and then collect their large gigantic
absolutely,
checks. Absolutely,
absolutely. So it's just kind of, I mean, Jesus Christ! I read a fucking article the other day about the you know, top paid DJs in the game. And do you know who was on that list?
Paris Hilton.
Fuck you. First, for knowing that. And second, for knowing that. I couldn't fucking believe it. I was just exactly. Like, all right, that's it.
It's Paris Hilton. How the
that's
in it. Like Ibiza, Spain. She travels all of Europe now. That's what she does. She's a club jock, and it's like, what the fuck?
I mean, hell, if you know, she's tried singing, she's tried rapping, she's tried.
She draws a huge crowd. She cashes large checks.
Absolutely, but absolutely.
There has to be like a midget up underneath there, like, you know, like a mechanical Turk that's running the whole thing for her.
Probably not. She probably pays very good money for somebody to do all of this, you know, pre-production.
Before
she even gets there for whatever it is, whatever set she's going to. Hello. And basically, you know, it's just kind of like it just takes away from everything, man. It just kind of sucks, you know. It just kind of sucks. But at the same time, you can't stop the ocean, baby. You know what I mean?
You can put your
arms out and push all you want, but you can't stop it. And it's just, you know, it's the way technology's gone. So, hey, what are you gonna do?
When I was at Clear Channel, when I was down on Beale Street, and I'd been in there for probably, I guess, 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. I was included into this list of people. There were the Memphis or Mid-South DJ Association or whatever it was that was around at the
record
time.
Pool.
No.
Okay.
It had nothing to do with radio people.
You're right. Okay.
They were basically club jocks, right?
Oh, okay.
And they were trying to include radio people into that. Obviously, they didn't make that connection that there's a difference between a radio jock and a club jock. And I remember Drake referring to them as DJs, and that meant for them dog jerker, as opposed to disc jockey. Because if you think about it, you know, when I hear the term disc jockey, I think of guys like Alan Freed, you know, George Klein, these
Absolutely.
Guys, you know.
Cousin Brucey and the like, those guys that actually really started it, and
they were
and
flipping wax,
absolutely.
And they were, you know, they were going,
absolutely,
you know,
that truly was an art form.
Yeah,
like that really was, like, as much as we like to look back at that stuff now and go, what a jerk off, you know, like that really was an art form. You had to have that timing, and you had to turn it on and off, and you know, now it's all push button, bullshit. You don't have to be there.
Yeah, it's a very funky rhythm that you got into. And I was fortunate enough to work in that environment, even with, you know, with the vinyl, with the carts, and then into mm-hmm. CDs. Even CDs, you know, there was a different rhythm, but it allowed you to speed things up a little bit. You know, the behind the scenes stuff. And then when we saw the computers coming in to really start taking over the way this whole thing was really being done, then it was like, well, I want the ability to control my own segue. I know that this particular tune sounds really good starting at this particular point as this other song is fading out, and I know that out point, but I can't control it because the damn machine's already pre-programmed to do it.
That's right, Johnny Fever. Don't get carried away. You do what you're told.
Exactly. Sit down, shut up, and have another cup of coffee.
And make sure you read the fucking log.
Oh, and make sure you sign up. Transmitter readings got to be done.
Oh my god!
In and out of shifts, all the FCC crap that was like,
fuck. And for some of our people that are tuning in, if they even give a shit, you gotta at least break down about the log real quick, because not everybody's hip to that.
Which log? The commercial log? The playlist log? The
take your pick. They were all a pain in the ass.
When I started at 103, there was a stack of paper, right? That was stapled mm-hmm. together.
Oh, yes.
And each page was 1 hour of the day. So there were 23 of these pages. Thus, you would say 24, but no, there's that 23rd, which takes you into the midnight hour, the next one. And it was typed out by a program that they use called Selector, mm-hmm. which would do the playlisting for you. So you didn't have to, you know, manually figure it out. And you had A rotation, B rotation, C and D rotations.
Wow.
And you had sweepers that played at this point, but it was your roadmap for the night. So my dumbass asked the question, so where do the requests fit in? Oh, we don't do requests.
That's right.
You always tell them it's coming up.
That's right. Or I was just going to get to that. Stay tuned.
Yeah, it's coming up here in just a bit. Yeah, hang tight, buddy. Yeah, you know, and you always had to be like, you know,
yeah,
cool
yeah.
and calm and to the point, and then you're going, you hang up the phone, you go, jerk off. You know?
Yeah, because you start off, when you get in there, you're like, well, that wasn't cool, when you see the first guy do it, and then a couple months later, you fast forward, and you're the asshole going, what a fucking asshole, you know, and you're hanging up on the guy.
So yeah, when you were the kid that called the jock.
Absolutely.
And you're like, oh man, I got to talk to him for
a
second.
Answered.
He answered the phone. You know?
Rang 50 times, and I stayed on the line.
And he was like, yeah, what's up, brother? You know, it's, hey, can you play, you know, the Stones, blah, blah, blah. And he'd go, oh yeah, man, it's coming up, man.
Or he'd go, yeah, man, just hold on, brother. It'll be on.
What made you feel really special is when he went, hey, what's your name?
Oh, God.
And then you're like, oh, wow. I felt like, you know, he knows me now.
Yeah, whatever.
It was that whole, and you know, now in the business, he hit the drop button on the damn call and he went, fuck off.
Exactly. Yeah. If he even answered it, because now a lot of times you call the stage, there's nobody even in
there. There's nobody in the room.
It looks like a fucking Christmas tree. Every line is lit up. You know, from every lonely jerk-off schmo to some 12-year-old who's up past bedtime calling in, there's nobody in there.
What really opened my eyes to a lot of that was the control panel for the phone system had a button that said busy all.
Yes.
And it would be everything but the hotline.
And it was all over the place, and then as soon as you hit it, it was all synchronized. It would just all together pulsate.
Pulsate, yes.
Absolutely.
And now there's this thing, or at least I don't know if it's around anymore, but there was this company called Radio Voodoo that created an answering system for radio stations. It was a voicemail thing. So if somebody called and it'd say, hey, the jock can't get to you right. It'd be the image guy that would voice it.
Oh, my God.
He'd say, hey, the jock can't get to you right now.
I wonder how much that set him back.
It was all trade. It was on spots.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah, and then there whatever. Would be, you know, the poor schmuck would leave a voicemail. And then apparently in your email, if you were logged into it, it would pop up and it would say, hey, so-and-so called here from this number at this time requesting this song. And it would use translation software to actually text it out to you.
Wow. I you know.
And I don't even think it's a thing anymore.
I'm sure it's not. I can.
Because it's just easier to hit busy all, shut up, or worse, leave it open and nobody answer.
Well, that's typically what you'll get. You'll sit on the phone and be like, I finally got through. And, you know, after five busy signals, then it's ringing. And then after the 1,000th time, you're like, all right, fucking. And you hang up and you just
say, you realize, screw it.
Then you try to call back again right after that, and it's busy.
The contesting thing? Ugh. Be the 15th caller? You'll love this bit, what we used to do. I'm gonna out this completely.
I'm sure I already know, because we probably did the same exact shit, but go ahead.
Hey, you're caller 1. Hey, you're caller 9. Hey, you're 12. You're 14. You suck. Drop it. Wait a couple of minutes, and then pick up the next line, and it'd be, you're 15.
Wow, you did better than we did. We were actually like, you're caller 1. You're caller 15. And then you... Hold on. Back when you actually could still clap while you were sitting there.
Yeah, exactly.
And, and you had whatever jerk-off engineer that was in there with you, like, come on, clap, and it sounds like there's a, you know, two people
you'd roll,
in there.
You'd roll the digital reel-to-reel, which I have one here.
Oh, wow.
I have a 360 back there.
Nice.
Completely outdated technology, but...
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, hey, that's the good thing about a lot of this shit now, because everything is becoming obsolete, that now you got these kids who are going back looking for this kind of stuff. You know, you got jerk-offs looking for floppy disks. You got jerk-offs looking for, you know, records. And I listened to...
These jerk-offs would be known as hipsters.
Hello. But but I just actually, and this was like, Jesus, I guess I'm no better because I was listening to NPR earlier, but
that's all right.
But thank you.
You gotta broaden your horizons.
Well, I try to.
You gotta dabble.
I try to, but they just did a story on guys who are looking for 78s.
Really?
Yes, that is a new thing, and this will show you how sad it is. They were talking to a lady who specifically learned how to scuba dive because they found out that there is a shit ton of 78s at the bottom of Lake Michigan.
It just fell off a boat somewhere?
Something to that effect, like a houseboat. Like there was some kind of way they didn't even get into all of that. They were just amazing.
Well, they were durable as hell. They were big, thick dinner plates.
Of course. I mean, you could kill somebody with it. But but she was like, yeah, I did that. And some of the stuff that I found is priceless. And it's just like... Holy shit, how many people, you know, when you were young, you'd go up in somebody's attic or, you know, you went to somebody's grandparents' house, and you're like, who the hell listens to this shit? You throw
Learn
it at each
Spanish.
Other. Yeah, and you try to break somebody's ankle hurling it at them, and you know, now, you know, they're in demand. So that is kind of the...
I actually have a few of them here, but there were...
Well, you ought to look up on her guide, because she just...
Oh, show, is that what she does?
She just published a guide, that'll show you, like, a price list, so... I mean, that's the good thing about it. You know, you do have, you know, jerk-offs kind of like me that love that, you know, that prehistoric shit, and you try to find stuff and either refurb it or you find it and it's still in pristine condition and it's like a great find and you hold on to it. Like, you know, the old wooden radio that I showed you. Like,
any
of that kind of stuff is just, you know, anything with tubes, any of that kind of stuff. Like, it's in demand now, man.
That you were telling me about, I think it was turntables. Even the, you know, the stuff that was, you know, 80s, 90s, top of the line back then. And when they were used, you pick them up for, I don't know, $150, $200 because they were durable, like a Techniques, you know. I have a Techniques here. And the cartridges would be like $95, $100. Now, you look up the model numbers of those damn turntables, and they're like $500, $600.
Absolutely.
Cartridges are $300 and $400. It's
Absolutely.
Like, what the fuck?
Absolutely.
They're not making them anymore, at least... You know, not like that, but...
Absolutely. That's why assholes like me, well, Jesus, I keep just hanging myself with this whole hipster bullshit. But when I go into these thrift stores and stuff like that, and I'm looking around, one of the first things I do is I go back and I look to see what kind of technology they got back there, boy.
Oh, yeah.
And you run back there and you look
next to the VCR, there might be a turntable.
And the Beta, you know, it's right there, man. And you can find, you know, I've found some pretty good stuff, but it's just kind of, you know, it's a hit or miss thing because now everybody's into it. So everybody's grabbing it up, you know, throwing it on eBay, you quadruple the price, and, you know, bust some guy's head in Canada for some shit that you found down at, you know, Jesus, I was about to sound old as hell. I was going to say at the Five and Dime, but you know, down at Woolworths.
Down at Woolworths.
Yeah. But that was even before my time. How the fuck do I come up with
this
shit?
I've been to the Woolworths Five and Dime. I'm not that old. I'm not that much older than you, but you know.
But you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of stuff, man, just used to, I mean, people saw it and you were like, phew. You know, whatever. Everybody's got that shit. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know? And now you're lucky to find, you know, an all-in-one console that still works. And, you know, it's got all the bells and whistles on it. And, I mean, I love that kind of stuff. I'm a nerd for that shit.
My old man had a it was a piece of furniture. You know, it had the lift top, the wood thing with the hardware that held the lid up until you had to push it back up and then flip the switch so it'll come back down.
Yes.
But in there was a turntable with that big tall spindle so you could stack your LPs.
Absolutely.
And then there would be a radio in there, and that was it, I think, on this particular deal. And it was a two-piece deal, and they were wired together because they were both speakers, but that's one right. of them was the player.
That's right.
And it had if I recall, it was like an aluminum arm, you know, mm-hmm. the stylus,
mm-hmm.
and it was Art Deco. It was round. The cover of it had these horrible brown and teal colored fabric that was, you know,
you know
what I'm talking about.
Oh yes,
and it was dark stained wood. And it was just beautiful, and I remember being fascinated by it as a kid, mm-hmm. and it was sitting in our garage, and I cracked it open. I plugged it in. I thought, well, I'm going to put a record on this thing, and that thing shocked the ever living shit out of me.
But they were so, and of course they weighed fucking several tons.
Well,
they had
huge transformers in them and the tube systems that
absolutely.
Were in there.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, they were
but
wonderful.
They sounded, they were just so warm. They just sounded
one of those
so,
systems,
yes, I do actually. I do have one, and I tweaked it actually because I had one that is similar to what you were talking about. I actually have two of them. One I just sold to someone, but I kept one that I tweaked and added a pristine condition 8-track player to it.
Oh,
so
right.
Yeah, and it actually it actually was a Zenith that had the tube television in the middle of it. So you had on one side you had the record player and it had the record storage where you could put them down in there.
Yeah.
You know, and then it had the black and white in the middle.
Yeah.
And I actually, the tube is no longer there. Because
when the TV sat on the floor back in those days.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. The tube is no longer in there. It was gutted and turned into an entertainment center system, whatever the hell you want to call
right.
it. And I put some shelves in there so you can actually put, you know, whatever you want to store on the inside.
A little bar.
But the bar is on the other side.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump the gun.
No. Yeah, I was going to say, I gutted the other side. It has pool table felt on the inside of it, and I put mirrors in there, and it has antique decanters in it with a little installed light switch where you turn it on, and it has a little mini light on the inside of it. And yeah, you can hide the drinks out from the kiddies in there, but the thing is huge. It weighs a freaking ton.
Yeah.
And it is a great conversational piece. The speakers still work.
Oh yeah. And I'm sure they sound great.
Well, I added some jacks to it so you can actually plug in your iPod or you can plug in your CD player or whatever.
It's got
your left and right on there and you can plug it in and it sounds great. And I know I get on my fucking neighbor's nerves, which I don't care if you're listening. I hate you, cunt. But my downstairs neighbor, I hate her.
Yeah,
but
fuck her too,
but
right?
Yeah, she's just as loud. Yeah, man, and you cannot replicate that sound now. I mean, of course, there's programs now that you can punch and you're like tube sound and you hit it, but it's just, God, I am getting old. It just lacks
right,
that
yeah.
warmth, you know, it's just different.
They'll never be able to duplicate
well, it's
that,
the same,
I don't
you know, it's
I
the
say
same,
that now.
It's the same thing from, you know, every guitar player that I've ever worked with. You know, they say the same shit. They're like, man, I want a tube amp. You
right.
know, fuck this new bullshit. Like, I want a tube amp. And, you know, they break the bank on trying to find, you know, a classic tube amp. And at first you're like, who gives a shit? Because I'm a singer and I don't give a shit. And I'm like, whatever, just plug in, fucker. But then when they plug it in, you're like, ooh.
Ooh,
that
yeah.
there is a difference.
Yeah,
you know,
major,
there's a big difference. So, God damn, yeah, I can't even believe I sound like I'm supposed to be.
But that's the beauty of it. That's what I talk about at the very beginning of this thing. I said there are times when you and I both feel that we were born in the wrong decade because I think, not to take anything away from the previous generations
mm-hmm,
behind us,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure they enjoyed all of that. But with the knowledge that we have now, we should build us a fucking time machine. Go back and say, let me tell you kids, this is how shit's going
to
go.
Doc Brown, if you're out there, where's the fucking DeLorean? I'm ready to get in, charge up the flux capacitor, and let's get the hell out of here.
Where
dude.
Would you go? 40s, 50s?
I would probably, well, actually, you know, that's funny that you asked
me. As an adult, where would you go?
Okay. I got to say it's between two times, and I'm kind of stuck on it, I guess. If you ask me another couple of years from now, it might change. But, A, I would love to have been around when Marconi first figured this whole thing out. And, you know, it's a throw between Marconi and Tesla.
Right.
And the 50s, dude.
The 50s.
The 50s. I mean, from 50 on. I mean, yeah. You know, oh my God, man, from the music to...
Coming right out of the Second World War.
Yes.
And everybody's got this awakening now.
And that kid generation was way different because it truly was new. It wasn't, you know, reborn, because now everybody's like, we're bringing back rock and roll. Well, they didn't have a point of reference.
That's right.
They're just like, we've got a new sound. We're about to kick ass. I'm going to plug in. Check this out.
Yeah.
And it blew people. I mean, well, there were still people blowing, you know.
Well, there was the swing scene, which was very, very close to rock and roll.
It was. And there was a lot of different, artists and stuff that sort of teetered right there on it. But like, once people were like, we're all just plugging in and we're about to rock your fucking socks off, you know, right after the whole acoustic thing, which I guess that whole thing was revisited once the singer-songwriter bullshit.
The folk, yeah.
Oh, God. All the yeah. Dan Fogelbergs and
right.
all that kind of bullshit. But,
if I had a hammer, beat your fucking head in.
Than.
My shirt says it.
But, yeah, man, that whole thing. I don't really say I'd like to be there, but, like, from the 50s, man, if I could just go back there, I wouldn't be getting back into the DeLorean. I would probably stay up until...
There.
Oh, I don't know. Vietnam. 80? 80?
Oh, no, you take it about 1980, yeah?
Up to 79, dude. Like
you would endure the 70s
the rocket,
as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me tell you something. To hear great stories of, like, the older guys who talk about, you know, what New York was, you know, in terms of, like, birthing the New York Dolls and the Ramones.
The whole
and
Studio 54 scene?
It came from that,
yeah,
really. You know,
yeah.
It was the sex, drugs, and disco.
CBGB
fuck you.
Was,
but
that
but
was,
yes, yeah. Once we got into that, and then the Ramones came around, and then the Brits were trying to copy the New York punk scene, and they did their own thing, and it was all happening right there. And, you know, you could still go down and to Times Square and go to a, you know, a nudie booth. And,
42nd Street.
Yeah,
Times Square.
Go,
yeah,
go jerk off and then go check out, you know, the Ramones or whoever was playing at the time. I mean, I could go on and on with all the different groups, but I mean, they were like, to me, they were like the catalyst and the New York Dolls and Johnny Thunders and all that kind of stuff. Like, recently I went to Brooks this past year and Richard Hell, who was actually...
Yeah, Richard Hell from television.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Who's also, played with Johnny Thunders and was mm-hmm. fresh out of, you know, the whole New York Dolls camp. To hear him tell the stories about how these guys didn't know what the fuck they were doing.
Right.
I mean, they knew what they were doing, but they didn't have any type of blueprint. Like, they knew what they wanted to do.
They just fell into part of it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And a lot of them died along the way. And some of them, you know, helped to bring about, you know, a different side of rock and roll that, of course, turned into glam and then ultimately turned into hair metal all that kind of stuff. But, like, that's the era that I would want to go into. You know, but I would want to hang out for that whole thing, man, because, I mean, America turned out some great music, dude, from the jazz scene all the way up to, you know, the early hip hop scene.
About 79.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said, 80. Like, when
the keyboard became so cheap that everybody and their brother had one and it sounded like it, you know.
Oh, yes.
Kurzweil. Yes. Thanks, buddy.
Oh, yes.
Go back to your, you know, your thing.
And damn you, Thomas Dolby. Damn you.
And I've never been a fan of the Dolby sound.
Well, let me tell you something. There are guys who have made a full-on fucking career from the Dolby sound, including Thomas Dolby. But
of course, yes.
But yeah, I can't believe it. Uh-huh. But it just, that whole scene, man. So I don't know. I guess if you were asking me a hit 'em, quit 'em kind of thing, like I could go back, hang out a few weeks, catch, you know, my favorite event. You know, whatever.
Like
and
the
then,
Sands in Vegas in 1956, you know.
See, now you're getting into a whole nother thing.
Right.
Because that's like...
Get away from the greaser for a minute, put on the coat and tie, the pockets square, the hair is right, you know.
Put a little three flowers in the hair, you slick it back.
Yeah.
No. More pomade, thank you.
More pomade.
More pomade.
Yes.
And, you know, you put it back, get a fresh pack of Chesterfields, and, pour me up some...
when a drink was a drink.
Cuddy and water, and hey,
we're
let's have a good time. That's right. You dress different, you talk different. Even if you were a douchebag, you still had to act like you had class.
Oh, my God, yes.
It was a prerequisite to go anywhere and do anything, and it was just like, God, man, now look at us.
Yeah, when the casino thing was really big here, and I would take the wife down there, I would kind of dress up a little bit. You know, we did that because that's what you do. It was a casino, for God's sake. And then I get in there and I'm like, I'm the only douchebag wearing a
jacket. You're like,
jacket.
Oh yeah, I'm in tunica.
In tunica. But I've been to Vegas.
Oh yeah.
And it was the same thing. It was the sweatpant wearing grandmas that were in there chained to the damn nickel slots.
But there are guys, man, that still will show up decked out.
Yeah, I believe you should be.
And, you know, rightfully so. You know what I mean? There's the history there, you know, and it's a whole thing.
The cash,
man.
On the money clip, you know.
It's the whole thing, man. It's I don't know.
I hate that I'm pulling this, but, you know, the word swagger back then means something completely than it does now. I mean,
absolutely, sir.
But a man had real swagger back then. You walked in, you carried yourself right. You know, you pointed at people. You said, "Hey, how you doing?"
That's
You got some jewelry on you. You know,
even if you were a douchebag, you had to even just act like you had class for the evening.
Yeah,
you know, just for that evening, you can wake up and be the same jerk off that you are.
But
you
that
know.
Night in that room, you belong to them.
That's right, man. That's right. So now you're making me kind of question where I was coming from with the whole rock scene and the hip hop scene.
But there were two different worlds. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, but I mean, God, it's you know, if you appreciate them all, you really wouldn't want to miss that. Because I would, man. I would want to be able to go and be, you know, front row seeing, you know, Frank, or seeing, you know, Bobby Darin, or
you go to a titty bar at 4 a.m. and catch Don Rickles' late night set.
That's what I'm talking about.
You know that.
Oh, you meant last week because he's still alive? No. Yeah. But
he's working.
I kid
scores,
because I love. Yeah. So yeah, man. That God, man. Yeah.
And it was
so
free and loose. And when you were done with the show, the artists came out to see
you.
Oh
yeah, they greet you.
They shake your hand.
Yeah.
They thank you for buying the ticket, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, of course, also, if you got out of line, you could get your ass whooped and there was no cops called. There was no, you know, nobody was...
Everybody knew, most everybody.
Calling lawyers and shit like that. You know, if you got too out of hand, you disappear.
Yeah. There's a lot of filled in holes
in
the Vegas desert, you know?
That's right. But, yeah, man. So, God, yeah, I guess that would be a place to visit as well.
I don't know that I'd want to live in that, but a good 6 months of that at the right time to really catch it and see all of it. You know, see the. I know there was a lot of the classy, and there was some of the seedy stuff that occurred at that time.
Mm.
I guess what we would consider dirty by their standards, you know, back then would be tame as anything now. You know.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, well, you also have to think about it again. You know, the PC movement, man, has stifled so much.
Oh, sure.
So much. Everybody's so busy crying now, you don't really get to enjoy
looking
yourself.
For something to be pissed off about.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about trashy,
right,
you know, or
right.
tacky, but like, you know, it's just, I don't know, man. Everybody's got a fucking cause now, and everybody's crying.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and I mean, just shut the fuck up. Have a good time, man.
Just get out and do it. And
if you don't like it, get the fuck out. Don't start a picket, you know, line or whatever, and get, you know, Mothers of America to come back you up and shit for bullshit.
Right.
Go find another scene.
Exactly.
Get the fuck out of here. Don't come over here and try to kill what... Oh, listen to me. Jesus. Where did that come from?
Well, that's all.
What's my age again?
Hey. See, and that's just it, because back then they thought like that.
Absolutely, man.
Look, like, you don't like what I do? Get the fuck out of here.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. It's that damn women's lib. That's what it was.
Oh, that's all it was. Have you ever seen the movie The Cloud Atlas?
Yes. With Tom Hanks,
Halle
Berry. Yeah.
The sequence that that takes place around the 70s when they're in the she's the reporter for some newspaper.
Yeah,
and she's been granted this interview at this nuclear reactor or this power plant over there, and the guy that's running the thing, who's just like the ultimate 70s douchebag, and you got messages over there.
Hello,
says, well, Ms. Smith, you know, and he's like, you know, if all these reporters look as good as you, I could get behind this women's lib thing. And it's like,
Absolutely. Oh, that was completely acceptable.
Absolutely.
And you knew your place, women. Just kidding, ladies. Just kidding.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
No, you knew your place.
Yeah, I wasn't either. Yeah.
Exactly. As soon as you got married, your career was over because it was time to get knocked up and be barefoot in front
Absolutely.
Of the stove. Because that was your job.
That's right. And the only time you were seen was at PTA meetings and at cookouts.
There you go. Bringing the casserole around.
And after church.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, the good old days.
Now, if it wasn't for working women, I'd have nothing, literally nothing.
Hey, coming from, you know, single household, working mother, career Navy and the whole bit, you know, I kid, but man, I got to tell you, she, or they, I can't even say just my mom, but like, you know, nowadays, man, it is a different world, sir.
Oh, yeah. See, I grew up in a household where, you know, the old man would come in from the job. He'd kiss the wife on the cheek. She's making dinner. He goes over to the little bar in the house. He pours him a scotch and water, and he sits down. He starts to read the paper. And I lived in that world.
Good times. Playing catch in the front yard.
Yeah, playing a little catch, you know that kind
nice.
Of thing.
Nice. You know? Very nice.
And then it was like, okay, you got your homework done? Yeah, and I'd be the fuck-up kid, you know, in the family anyway. But it was, you know. And, you know, I was disciplined if I got out of line, you know.
Oh, that's a whole nother thing. That is a whole nother thing. And I'm kind of guilty myself because now that I am a dad, you know, I'm like, I don't want to whip my kid. But, of course, I got my ass whooped. Oh, Not just whipped. I got whooped.
Whooped.
My dad came from that generation, and he was like, I took ass whoopings. I'll be damned if I'm going to let this shit slide.
But you got a little girl. That's a little different thing.
It is. It is. You know, and my sister, you know, I love her to death, but she would always piss me off because my dad would be like, don't you do that again, and then turn around and, you know, knock me the fuck out and go, why did you make her do that? You know, and I'm like, what are you talking about? So, yeah. I get it, man. I do get it, but, you know, it is different now, man. It is different. I mean, Jesus, now, you know, kids aren't afraid of cars.
No, they're
you know,
not.
They just walk out in front of your fucking car and they're like, my mom will sue you. But when, you know, back when we were kids, if your ass got hit, you know, it's because you ran out in the fucking street.
You
didn't have
ass.
Any business doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and you got in trouble for it. There wasn't any, you know, the suing. I mean, yeah, there were accidents. And if something bad happened in your family, I'm sorry, but you understand what I'm saying. Don't be a prick. So it's just a different time, man. It's just a different time. And kids now, you know, I mean, with anything, it's all always kind of been about the youth. But now it's just more youth driven than any other time, I believe, man.
As you know, I have a bar here.
Yes, you do. A lovely bar.
A lovely bar. And I have a nice set of the vintage Tom Collins glasses. You know?
Oh yes,
but they're the tall
Tom
rock
Collins,
the tall rock
so
glasses with the gilding on it. You know,
yeah,
it's been since worn off over the year, but it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
I have the Penguin brand ice bucket. You know,
nice.
You know,
with the tongs.
With the tongs.
Very nice.
And
very
and
classy.
I'll when I know it's going to be Daddy's night, I fill the ice bucket up. I mean, it's a ritual, and I set it
Daddy's
down the
night,
bar.
That's great.
And I've got a little hoop back there that I keep a bar rag on. I've got a little sink back there. I got the whiskey ready. Got my glass ready. I'm gonna sit on the business side of the bar, not the bartender side, but the
That's
business
right.
side of the bar, and engage in, you know, my moment with that, where I'm with a goddamn BevNap. You know, you put the drink on it for Christ.
Don't forget the cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
Can't have one without the other. You gotta have the cigarette.
The wife has chased my smoking ass out
of
the
house.
But, you know, that's a concession.
Yeah, you know.
You get around it. But having an unlit one sitting in the ashtray.
I mean, just holding it between your two fingers while just the motion, the act of it.
Right.
It just goes hand in hand.
And I have a radio that sits on the corner or the end of the bar, which has a different input.
Which is a great radio, too. I just have to say, I know a lot of you will never get a chance to see his bar, but it is awesomely decorated. And if you just kind of focus in on this one corner of the bar, it is a time machine itself.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's got a little bit of kitsch, but not too much.
It's perfect.
And I'd sit there and I plug my iPhone in, you know, and then load up the, you know, some Sinatra, you know, that kind of stuff. And then
some
I take the
Dino.
Phone, stash it.
Yeah.
And I want to look at it
Absolutely.
At that point. I sit there and enjoy my drink and think for a minute. They always tell you, you know, a man who drinks by himself is an alcoholic. If that's the case, then I'm guilty of sin. But I have to have that contemplative moment when I can drink and let that monkey out of the cage.
Absolutely.
And think about those times a little bit and say, you know what? These guys had it right back then. in the 50s and the 60s. They had this shit down.
It really did, man. And as a matter of fact, it was so good, it had to come to a fucking end.
It was so good that somebody got hurt, is what it boiled
Somebody
down.
Got hurt. Some women got pissed off.
You know? There was some chick who got groped, and she didn't like it.
Yeah,
and she
yeah.
filed a suit and shut the whole fucking thing down, you know?
Somebody who didn't have as much to drink and was sober was like, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, you guys, yeah.
Yeah. No. See, You gotta take that dirty stuff and throw it aside. So I can choose to use those times as a buffet in my mind.
Well,
and it may not be correct to do that, but
I gotta tell you, I've done the same thing. My lifestyle and living situation is a little bit different, but I do have a vintage bar that is quite sturdy, and I've spent many a night sitting on the other side of it on a stool.
Yeah.
You know, and I had friends over and they love to stand behind it.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. And I sit there and, you know, and you got the TV and stuff and you sit there. And sometimes you don't need anyone.
That's right.
That's it. You need your drink. You have time to think. You don't have a bunch of drunken antics going on around you.
Yeah.
And you can figure things out.
A pen and then maybe a notepad if something.
And I'm not talking about shitty, pissy, stumble to the bedroom kind of stuff, but like, you know, exquisitely toasted.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Just drunk enough.
Just drunk enough where you're still keeping it classy.
Right. There's a difference between an alcoholic and a drunk. I'm a drunk.
There you go. There you go.
That's the way it goes.
That's absolutely right.
You know, being able to sit down and be, you know, classy about it.
Well, you try.
And I've not gotten to the point where I'm, you know, before I sit down for my ritual of proper classic drinking by going into the closet and putting on a damn coat and tie. Although I probably should do that once, you know, as though I'm going out, but I'm actually staying in, you know.
If and when you do, sir. Please
I'll
let
call
me know.
You.
I will come dressed appropriately.
And we'll sit at the bar.
We will sit at the bar. We will talk. I know you have the, you know, the cigars in there.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
We'll open up the humidor.
I was going to say, I know the old lady won't let us spark up in there, but it'll be nice just to even be able to hold it, you know.
Or step out for a quick moment.
Yeah. No doubt.
You know, and I've got the, as you'll dig this, I used to do one of the first forays into syndicated radio I've ever had. I've never told you this story. I did a show called The Cocktail Hour.
Nice.
I created a character by the name of Richard Sterling.
Wow.
Which was me, and I changed my voice. I had this whole affected character.
Not to be confused with Rod Serling, but go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And he was just a lounge lizard. And I have the entire series that Rhino came out with of those kitschy, you know, the Cole Porter stuff, the, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I did a two-hour show, And all the voice bits that were in there had this sound effect as though I was sitting in some, you know, leopard print bar with red lights hanging over the top of it, you know.
With like a tiki statue over in the corner.
Yeah, there's
and
some
shit.
Tiki kitsch, nice. You know, that was the thing. And I always had a drink in my hand when I did the thing. And it was this make-believe producer by the name of Artie. And,
very you know,
and
nice.
I'm always talking to him off the side. And, oh, it was big.
Very nice.
It was big. In fact, the highlight of it was a Christmas special I did because I had enough of this Christmas music and that lounge, you know, really slimy stuff. And it was Santa Claus was coming out and I did all the voices for it. And it was live from the Hippodrome in some imaginary city. And there's this audience. There was audience reaction. It was this wonderful production that I did. Yeah. And I did that just to get my fill for that.
Oh, my God, dude. That sounds great.
Total theater of the mind. That's all it was.
I love that kind of stuff, though, man. Because the front of my bar, actually, it's not actually bamboo, but it's I really want you to see it.
Need to see it,
But it looks like it's bamboo, and it's got
Is it Bakelite bamboo?
Yes.
Oh, even better.
But it's very thin,
and it's
just lined across the front of it, and it's so sturdy and so well put together. I know that it came from somewhere in Midtown, from some bar in town, and I don't know from where it came, but it was handed to me by an older gentleman, and I could get into all that kind of crap, but I won't. The bar is just, it's so awesome.
A few fellas been over that thing a time or two.
Yes. And the bar is just so cool. And when it got handed down to me, man, I mean, there's no scorch marks on it from cigarettes, you know, from someone passed out. There's no, you know.
Somebody sitting it on the end.
Yeah. And the wood doesn't have, you know.
Rings.
Or puke, you know, it's stained into it or whatever. It was in great condition. That bastard weighs a fucking ton.
Oh, yes.
It is so solid, sturdy and steel, solid. Yeah. It is great, and I love it, and I miss it. And I had a little DVD player, a CD player underneath it, and I would put my DVD player. Everything was hidden, you know.
Yeah.
But in my CD player, I kept certain CDs, and I have... As a matter of fact, it is a Rhino collection. I'll make a copy if you want. And it's called Tiki Bar Classics.
Oh, my God.
And it's got everything from, you know, the songs where it's just the jungle noise with the music up till, you know, the...
With the Wurlitzer. Yeah, with the Wurlitzer.
Know, and the whole...
Sumac.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And when I would put that on, my friends would come in and go, what in the fuck are you listening to? And I'm like,
shut up and drink.
Shut up. Exactly. What do you have?
What do you have?
What do you got back there? Well, I got whiskey and I got whiskey.
Yeah, pick one.
What do you want?
Yeah.
You know,
with or without ice.
Yeah, I missed that bar. God, I got to go get it from my ex.
Well, we need to make sure you don't lose that.
Yeah, no shit.
Find a space for that.
But yeah, Rick already threw away my stripper pole stage, but
well,
look, I know I'm busted. I'm busting balls. That's I know.
The rug is still here.
It was trash. I know.
And I think the light is still around.
All right. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. So I know where you're coming from. And yes, it was before my time. But man, when I hear the older cats talk, you know, everybody from like since I've lived in Memphis, I would love to sit back and listen to guys. Like when I worked at a radio station that you know of, actually, where George Klein actually was doing his last, you know, actually on before he went over to Sirius XM.
Right.
And we would sit in the break room and he would just tell us stories and I wouldn't say a fucking word. Yeah. You just get him started, ask him about one subject. And he's you already know, you don't need him to keep going. He's going to do it on his own. You won't ask him.
Just say two words and away he goes.
That's it. And he can tell you everything up till now from there.
Yeah.
But you don't want to interrupt him. And it's not one of those, oh, God, one of these again. It was always something different. It was always cool. He knew every detail.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard that. And I've also heard guys who were you know, a little bit older than I who would tell the great stories about Joe Strummer. You know, spent his last days here, and when he was here for the filming of the movie Mystery Train, was here, and you know, it was all done in Midtown and all that kind of shit, like all over Memphis, and you would hear these stories about how guys are hanging out at various, you know, dives and shit. Joe Strummer comes walking through the fucking door, flicking his, you know, Zippo, smoking all the way up to the end, even though they killed him. You know what I mean? And he would come in, and he had no problem with sitting at the bar. You know, this guy's still collecting fucking checks.
Yeah.
And not having, out with the not having to do anything. And he strolls in with a t-shirt and jeans and fucking motorcycle boots and he'll sit there and tell you whatever the hell you want to know.
Right.
That's the kind of shit that I love because, I mean, you know, obviously you can't get those times back. Those guys were right there. You know, when I shake Klein's hand, I'm like, all the hands, this guy. You know, you become a bit of a fanboy.
Well, sure you do, yeah.
But you give yourself a pass, like we all do when it comes to shit that we like, but you give yourself a pass because, I mean, they were there. They were there at that time.
Yeah,
they weren't telling you a story they heard. They're telling you what the fuck they saw.
And what they did.
And what they did, because he was around for a lot of great shit, too, you know, around this town for the time, too. Sure. So everything from stories of, you know, Memphis Mafia all the way down to, like, hanging out and hearing stories about shit, anything from, you know, like all the Arden sessions, all the sessions over at Royal Studios, talking about, you know, Al Green and all these other great Stax and Volt and all these other high records guys. Mm. And I mean, it's just, I mean, man, I eat that shit up, man. I eat it up. And God, now you're making me rethink my time again, my time period.
Well, that's all part of the fun of it. We can't control it. But,
I know.
But I tell you what, though. You gave me an idea. I want to get you back in some night. You were talking about maybe sitting up at the bar.
Oh, yeah.
We'll take the gear and we'll put it in there.
Oh.
And we'll do one of these again. And in the background, we'll play that Tiki Bar collection.
Great,
and
dude.
we'll just hang and have a couple of dozen cocktails. And
thank you.
And shoot the shit. In fact, if we can string it right, we'll get us an actual bartender to work it while you and I are doing our thing there.
All right. I'm only going to do it if the guy wears a vest and a fucking bow tie.
Oh, that's the only way it's going to work.
And he better have a rag wiping every time we pick the damn drink up.
Yeah.
All right, I'm
absolutely.
In.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, yeah, we'll do all the whole thing. And actually, what we might even do is, like, you know, shoot it. You know, put a couple of cameras. Just shoot a little bit of it. You know, that thing would be awesome. Just show that we actually did it. We didn't just sit here and just, you know, bullshit our way through it.
Yes. Now you're talking. All right, don't pull my, don't twist my arm. I'm in.
Cool.
I'm in. So I don't even know that anybody really gives a shit about the fact that I came in to sit in with you or what the fuck I have to say. But I have to say, thank you, sir. This was awesome. Because I look up to you, too, as well.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate
that.
Just
so you know.
You said before we started you were a little worried about what road I was going to take you down. And I didn't know either, you know. But
yeah, a little bit. And I'm sure there's a thousand other
the nostalgia end, I know, is and I wasn't doing a softballing in any of this. I just know that you're very comfortable in that. You know, in that conversation, because
absolutely,
you know, because you hold on to those memories that a lot of people will throw away as they grow up. You know,
I mean, they help to shape you. Absolutely. You know, especially with the profession that we chose, and you know, you've always been passionate about music, even though you know you don't play in a band or anything like that. You love music.
Oh, yeah.
You love this forum. You love all that kind of stuff. And I've tried to dabble in a little bit of everything, but at the end of the day, you know, just like being on the mic, man. And,
sure,
and
you become the sum of all your parts, and you try and gather as many parts as you can. And if you're not working in a business like this, it fucks you up because you got all this shit you don't know what to do with.
Yeah, no shit. Know?
Or B, you are working in it, and so you're constantly displaying this information to people who don't really give a fuck, so that fucks you up.
Well, I mean, it's also a bit of a head trip, too, when you have to be the youngest dude in a room with people who make all the references and know all about showbiz terminology and shit that's fucking, you know, 40 years ahead of you.
Right.
And, you know, you're talking to chicks your age or a little bit younger, that's still acceptable younger, but not, you know, very much
more
younger than you, and they get no fucking references. They don't know what you're talking about. They're like, Who the fuck is Eddie Cordova? Like, what are you talking? Who's Johnny Carson? What the hell are you talking about? You know?
Yeah.
Don't you mean Jay Leno?
No.
But thank you. But no, man. Thanks. But it gets to be a little bit taxing, man, because you do feel very out of place. Even though I'm here and I'm, you know, it's now when you look at me and you're like, this fucking kid. But
no,
it's like,
I don't think that at all.
But
no.
But you understand where I'm coming from, and it's like, you know, so it's very it's very off-putting at times because I feel like I should be dating, you know, a 58-year-old woman.
Nothing wrong with that.
And hell no. If any 58-year-old women are hot out there and they hear
absolutely them. Drop us a line. And in fact, maybe we could bring her to the bar thing.
Oh, please.
Know? Oh, yeah.
And she has to have on a boa, and she has to look like Ginger or Marianne. I don't give a shit. Either one. But no, yeah, man. But so, you know, yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I dig the relationship that we have, and that, you know, I really sort of get you.
Yeah.
You know, and I appreciate the fact that you sort of let me in your world and hang out. And you guys, too, by the way, anybody that's listening. I would have never thought as a kid listening to Rick coming up on the radio that I would even be sitting with him right now talking about this shit, or that anybody would even give a fuck about what I have to say. But thanks to everyone.
I appreciate it, man.
Here's what's coming up on the next edition from Radioland.
Back for another edition of Walking Around in Radioland. I have planted roots here. This is 18 years I've been in this town, and a lot has happened to me here, and a lot has happened to this city in those 18 years, and I'm proud of calling this town my home. And yeah, ISIS is a scary thing. There's all this talk. Oh, they're going to be here. They're going to come to your town. They're going to come to Memphis, and they're going to cut your head off. It's like I almost have to believe there's some sort of a faceless enemy out there that we all have to be scared of. So we have to have these people in office that will definitely protect us at every turn. Was this woman, and I've never met her before, and she said, I just wanted to thank you for those podcasts you did about John.
Radio Memphis is an internet broadcasting service provided by PirateRadioStudios.com, Memphis, Tennessee, USA.
We're sitting on like 45,000 subscribers to this crazy thing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sorry to...
Number one state in the union that loves this show is the state of California.
Wow. Shout out to all my California people. I'll be seeing you soon.
But LA, San Francisco, they all love us.
Oh, my know, God. Yeah. 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 Well, all I have to say is thanks for having me, sir.
Anytime, my friend. You're welcome back anytime. And like I said, we're going to put this thing together. Now, look, I have a piano in there as well, so maybe we can rethink the whole thing and just bring in a piano player and just have him playing some like jazz while we're just talking and doing our shit like we're in a bar.
All right. Now I guess I'm going too far back now. I was going to say, I want him with the bow tie and the armband and the button-down shirt and the vest.
Yeah.
But, yeah, now he...
Nah, we got to put him in just a black coat and tie.
Absolutely.
You know, it'll be big.
He'll have the drink set
absolutely.
To the side.
We'll put up a fish bowl, you know, for you know, throw a couple of bucks in there, you know.
God,
that keep
would
be, him going.
That would be great.
It'll be a big time.
That would be great. Tune in for that.
Yeah, oh yeah, we'll let you know when that happens. JC, thank you so very much.
Thank you, sir.
Anytime, my friend. All right, that's it for this edition, and we'll see you next time. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.